if we can redesign ourselves. Should we? David Ewing Duncan is a best-selling author and director of the Center for Life Science Policy at the University of California, Berkeley. In this YouTube interview, Duncan explores what cutting-edge technologies and personalized medicine can tell us about individual health and life. Can we redesign ourselves? If so, would we do it well? That's the topic of a presentation by David Ewing Duncan, November 2nd, 2009, in Kansas City, Missouri. David, can we or should we redesign ourselves?
Well, I think that there's almost two answers to that question. One is, in a sense, we are struggling right now, if you will, with redesigning ourselves using current technologies and technologies that are on the cusp. And part of what's being talked about at the meeting here on genetics and bioethics is those technologies that are basically here or about to be here, like genetic testing. And it's not exactly redesigning ourselves. It's more getting information about ourselves that might help us predict our future, if you will, or what our health might be in the future. But it's definitely setting a platform for a more distant future where we may be able to do more manipulation of genes, proteins, other facets of our cells. I'm not going to get into that too much in this talk. I'm going to be more in the here and now. So when you say redesigning, it's more trying to figure out, I guess, what the blueprint is right now that we'll be working from in the future.
So it really isn't something for me, like a big Cardinal baseball fan, and I really like Albert Pujols, and I want to redesign myself to Albert Pujols, into being Albert Pujols. And you're saying that's not really the point of all this.
Well, there are people out there that are thinking along the lines of, say, how do my genes line up against, say, famous sports figures or, I don't know, models or movie stars or, you know, financial titans, whatever it might be. And as of yet, I haven't heard of a major figure in sports or Hollywood, let's say, that have posted their genomes, although that would be interesting. I know that for a long time there was a website, which I think was called topmodel.com or something like that, which was purporting to test people to see if they were basically among the beautiful people. And that kind of thing will be coming, but I don't think it's quite here yet. On the other hand, there are some scientific studies that are trying to figure out why some people excel. I mean, why is Lance Armstrong this unbelievable specimen of humanity? You know, a guy who's in his late 30s and he still comes in third place in the Tour de France. You know, there's something seriously genetic going on there that allows him to do that. And it would be interesting to find out what's going on.
Any studies showing anything in particular of why Lance Armstrong is able to succeed like that?
As far as I know, Lance has not had his genome tested, although for all I know, he has. I do know of a study recently. I was at a meeting 2 or 3 weeks ago at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio, and Jim Cavanaugh, who was an NFL star in the 70s and 80s, also is an MD, PhD, and he runs something called the Buck Institute out in California where I live. And they're actually running a study with 100 ex-NFL stars, and they genotyped them. They did their genetics and trying to find out if there's something special there compared to the regular population. And unfortunately, they didn't have enough stars to really power the study. You need probably thousands of people to really understand that. But you know, you're beginning to look into that.
Well, what about then, and keeping this on sports, the idea of using steroids to enhance your performance? Is that somewhat along the same line?
Well, as a journalist and as a commentator, I'm allowed sometimes to get frustrated. I don't have to do the purely objective stories.
And why? You know, it's so boring.
I know. I wrote a column, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago where I said, no, let's just do it. Let's have an enhanced Olympics. You know, let's have an enhanced NFL. Let's just go crazy. I mean, as long as it doesn't cause harm to people, which in fact steroids do, most of them, especially abusing them, that's not really what they're intended for, is to bulk up like Barry Bonds for the San Francisco Giants. But, you know, we're having so many different ways where we are able to enhance people, and there certainly will be more. I mean, many of the therapies that are being discussed now to help sick people actually could be used and probably will be used in the very near term for enhancement.
It seems like the questions that are being raised on this, David, revolve around birth, and about around old age. And at birth, whether you want to have an Albert Einstein or an Albert Einstein, Albert Pujols combination, who knows? Would it be fair to say that?
Well, I sometimes ask that question when I'm giving a talk to people. If you could enhance yourself or you enhance your memory by 50% with like taking a pill or some, you know, simple procedure that was harmless, would you do it? And like, you know, there's a Twitter in the audience, and depending on if I'm Silicon Valley or someplace else, you know, you get usually a fair number of people raising their hands, but a fair number that don't. And then I say, what if it's your kid we're talking about and everyone else in his class has the enhancement? You get 100% of people raising their hand. So this is what's going to happen. I mean, in some ways, we already have that. I mean, we have improved diet. We have access to medications, you know, some parts of the population. And, you know, we wouldn't deny our kids those kind of basic enhancements, if you will, compared to, say, previous generations. And already there's surveys. I have a son in college, and, you know, some of his friends use some antidepressants as you know, enhancements basically before tests. They're not abusing it. You know, they're not. This is not recreational drug use. They'll take a little, you know, maybe a tenth of an Adderall, which is an amphetamine, right before they go into a test. Hmm. And while we think, oh my gosh, drug abuse, but in their generation, which grew up with Prozac and, you know, ADD, all these different conditions that they didn't even have when I was a kid, this has become somewhat normal, and many of them have taken it, you know, since they were children, for, you know, prescribed to them for ADD or some other condition, and in their minds, it's okay, and they're not, you know, again, they're taking it maybe a couple times a term when they're really tired, they really need that extra boost. So, is that okay or not? I mean, you know, I think we have to decide that, but it's already happening.
Is there any particular argument that you're making in your book, The Experimental Man?
The main argument in Experimental Man, or I should say the project, was about trying to find out what one person can discover about this brave new world of personalized medicine. And there's a very important distinction here that I'm a healthy person. And in the past, we've always dealt with sickness. Our whole medical system since the beginning, you go back to Hippocrates or even before, right up to the present, it's all about treating symptoms when people get sick. But a lot of these predictive technologies, like genetic testing, are allowing us glimpses into our future while we're still healthy. And so it was a way for a journalist that spent years reporting on all of these fabulous discoveries and the gene for this and the gene for that to actually try to make sense of it from a human standpoint. And it started with a Wired story I wrote where I tested myself for genes, and then a National Geographic story where I tested myself for hundreds of environmental toxins that show up inside of me. And so in the book, I set out to do everything. Genes, environment, brain. I did brain scans and then tie it all together in the last section called body. And probably the biggest takeaway for me, which was a little bit unexpected, is that we are closer than we think on a broad number of new technologies that don't really communicate. The people that have discovered these things don't communicate well with others. Like the geneticists don't talk to the environmental toxicologists very well. They don't talk to the neuroscientists. And in fact, we are close to, I think, being able to encompass all of these new developments into people, into a single person. And what I call for as a policy person, because I have a new program at Berkeley, is to begin this integration process and really be systematic about it. And I think we'll find that this age of personalized medicine will come a lot sooner if we think in those terms.
For more on The Experimental Man, you can go to experimentalman.com, or you can go to amazon.com for that book by David Ewing Duncan, or other books, and for the audio that David will present today in his presentation here in Kansas City. That will be available on practicalbioethics.org. David Ewing Duncan, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Bioethics Channel. I'm your host, Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to The Bioethics Channel.